Hey everybody, and welcome to this episode of the Alec D'Lo MMA Show, where we are going to be breaking down the main card for today's UFC Fight Night Durm versus Rodriguez event. Kicking off here in like an hour and a half, prelims start in like 25 minutes, so I apologize guys, I'm a little late on getting this one out. It'll probably be out while the prelims are actually airing. But anyway, I wanted to get this out, give my predictions regardless before the fight started, and also hit a couple of other talking points. There's one topic in particular that I really want to make sure we cover, but first, we definitely have to address the fact that Deontay Wilder and Tyson Fury are facing off for the third time tonight in a heavyweight clash. The first fight obviously ended in a draw, and that where Tyson Fury famously rose from the dead after getting knocked down by Deontay Wilder. Looked like he was going to be finished in that one. So that fight ends in a draw. Second one, Tyson Fury beats up on Deontay Wilder pretty soundly and gets him out of there. I think the corner of Deontay Wilder threw the towel in the seventh round. And now tonight, Deontay Wilder is a pretty big underdog going into this fight against Tyson Fury based on the results of the second fight, right? Because he lost so, I mean, Tyson Fury just won so impressively. And I'm not going to pretend to know anything about boxing, but if I had to pick, I'm probably picking Tyson Fury to win again tonight. I just think there's things that he can do that Deontay Wilder can't. I think he has a little bit better footwork, a little bit better head movement. Excuse me. I think he works the jab a little bit better. I think he throws his combinations a little bit more smoothly and throws, you know, more complex combinations, sets traps, etc. But you cannot discount the knockout power of Deontay Wilder and his ability to just end your night if you make one mistake, right? And he said that before. And I mean, look at the Luis Ortiz fight where he knocked him out by punching him in the fucking forehead. I mean, the guy has ridiculous power. He has a very strange and awkward build for the heavyweight division. I believe he's like 6'7". And yeah, man, he just has ungodly power in his right hand. And if he does land it, there's no guaranteeing that Tyson Fury gets back up like he did in that first fight. So I don't know. The fact that Deontay Wilder is such a big underdog, I think he's worth like a bet just because he does have that knockout power. I think, though, one of the things that's going to kind of come into play is the mentality of Deontay Wilder. Like, you heard him making excuses for the last fight. And when that happens, when you get dominated like that, it's not what you want. You want accountability, and you want to know that he's going in and making corrections that he needs to, and that he doesn't think that the second fight was some sort of fluke. Like, he got outclassed. He got outboxed. And he's got to be able to deal with that and go back to the gym and prepare. And, you know, he's probably not going to be able to bridge the gap in terms of pure boxing skill between himself and Tyson Fury. But what he can do is try to learn from the first couple fights and work on ways to create openings where he can land the power shot, because that's what's going to get him the win. He's going to win this fight by knockout if he wins, right? So hopefully he's been addressing that. I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see where his headspace is at tonight when he steps into the ring against a guy who just dominated him. Excuse me. Next thing I wanted to talk about was a pretty big fight announcement for the UFC. It looks like Giga Chikadze and Calvin Kattar are going to headline the January 15th bout in 2022, which will be the first bout of the year for the UFC, and a great way to kick off the new year for them. This is going to be a bout between two guys who I think have a lot of pride in their striking. Like, you know how sometimes when two strikers match up against each other, the one with the better grappling will end up winning, right? Because the striking's so close, they almost both don't want to take risks there, so the better wrestler ends up getting the win. I don't think that happens in this fight. I think they both have so much fucking pride in their striking ability and in their respective area. Like, Calvin Kattar is a really talented boxer, whereas Calvin Kattar is going to come in with more of a kickboxing approach, right? But I think that they both have just so much confidence and so much, like, pride and how good they are in their departments that they're going to want to test that against each other. And I think you see a stand-up war here for this main event. So great matchup for the UFC. I'm going to look forward to watching tape on that one, breaking that down, because like I said, two high level guys going at it. One thing I did want to talk about that I know I'm a little late on addressing, but it was the death of Justin Thornton stemming from his knockout loss to Dylan. My goodness, his last name is Dylan Kleckler. After a bare knuckle FC bout in, I think it was August 20th, 2021. And the whole thing is tragic, right? But the first problem is the fact that the promotion even set this bout up, right? And we're going to break down why in a second here. But the real problem behind all this is the body that is sanctioning the event. And this event that took place in Mississippi was sanctioned by the Mississippi State Athletic Commission, right? This bout was allowed to take place by them. Ultimately, like, you can blame the promotion for setting it up and making the matchup, blah, blah, blah. But ultimately, these are the people responsible for what happened, in my opinion. You have to put some sort of blame on them, because when you look, when we break down, like, all of the, everything surrounding this, this fight should have never happened. All right, so let's talk about this. Justin Thornton is a 39-year-old man, right, who is facing up against Dylan Kleckler, who is also 39, and maybe they were looking at that and thinking, oh, two guys that are the same age, this is fine. Like, I don't, obviously, they're not doing in-depth looks at these guys' record and the damage that they've sustained throughout their career, right? Justin Thornton has a professional MMA record of 6 wins and 18 losses. Of those 18 losses, 11 have come by way of knockout. He's on a 5-fight losing skid dating back to 2017. His opponent, Dylan Kleckler, also 39, he's 11-1, with 10 of those wins coming by way of knockout. And he had a previous Bare Knuckle FC bout back in February of 2021, where he knocked his opponent, Chris Jensen, out in the first round. So this guy has 11 knockouts in professional fights, be it bare knuckle or MMA, right? This guy has as many knockouts that are wins on his record, on his resume, as Justin Thornton has knockout losses on his, right? How in the world do you ever look at this fight and think it's a good idea? So what happens is, Dylan Kleckler goes in there, knocks Justin Thornton out violently in the first round. I mean, knocks him out on his feet, and then he face plants onto his face, right? It's not the fault of the sport. It's not the fault of the athletes. Like, they're just trying to get fights, and they're trying to, it's tough, man. It's tough. Like, you get these matchups and stuff, and you accept it, and you're trying to get paid. Like, you're trying to make your way through this life as a fighter. It's somewhat the fault of the organization for booking a fight like this, for thinking this would be okay, but it is absolutely the fault of the Mississippi State Athletic Commission. You cannot sanction a bout like this, and you're clearly not even looking at the records. No one in their right mind would ever make this fight happen. And you're also not taking into account the damage that this man has sustained throughout his career so far, and you're going to let him go in there against a killer, a guy who just knocked his opponent out in the first round just a few short months ago, who has a professional MMA record of 11-1 with 10 wins by knockout? Like, come on, man. Like, use your fucking head. And it's disgusting because you see these, this is what's like, you see this happen in sports like boxing, and it makes you nervous for these guys like Evander Holyfield, who's going up against a probably very testosterone-filled Vitor Belfort, right? Like, this kind of shit is bleeding in to a sport in boxing where it's like, been around for a long time, is a big part of culture. It's not like bare knuckle FC even, right? So you see these bad decisions. And why I'm referring to this one is because, if you guys don't know, Evander Holyfield versus Vitor Belfort was a boxing match originally slated to take place in California, but the athletic commission there wouldn't approve it. And good on them. They shouldn't have, right? They should never approve that fight. That fight should never be fucking sanctioned. But what Triller did is picked up their whole event and moved it out to Florida, and they approved the fight, and then Vitor Belfort goes out and fucking beats up on Evander Holyfield. And it could have been a whole lot worse. So, I mean, these athletic commissions have to do a better job of analyzing the fights and the matchups and understanding and everything. And just, man, it's fucking disgusting. They need to do a better job, and they need to be held accountable when shit like this happens too, because in my opinion, something like this, it's glaringly obvious that this matchup never should have happened. These two are not at the same, they might be the same age, but they are not on their career trajectory is like, one guy's going like this and the other is like going like this, right? It's not a good matchup, and it's not a good look, and they need to fucking figure this shit out, because it's literally costing people their lives. So enough ranting on that. Let's move on to breaking down this main card. Well, first, let's start off with the prelims that are going to start here in a few seconds. Let's just go over the fights there. You got Steve Garcia versus Charlie Ontiveros, Lupi Godinez versus Savannah Juarez, Damon Jackson versus Charles Rosa. That should be a good fight. And then Alexander Romanov, who's undefeated right now, is fighting Jared Vandera in a heavyweight bout. Romanov's going to be a pretty heavy favorite in that one. I think he's going to win. But so the first fight on this main card was supposed to be about between Deron Wynn and Philip Haas. But apparently Deron Wynn had to withdraw from the fight due to some medical reason. So Chris Curtis, who has been making his way through the PFL, he's on like a 5-fight winning streak over there, offers to step in and take the fight on his UFC debut, right? He goes in, he makes the weight, and then Philip Haas denies the fight, says he doesn't want to take it. And then supposedly, James Krause, who is cornering Tim Elliott, so he's here for the event. Tim Elliott's fighting on the main card against Mateus Nicolau. James Krause offers to step in and fight Chris Curtis. So you have this new fight on there, right? And then it doesn't end up happening, which is a bummer. It drops off. So they bump up Felipe Calares and Chris Gutierrez to the first main event slot, or the main card slot. And this, I mean, the James Krause versus Chris Curtis, I wish that would have happened just because the story would have been insane. And I think I saw Brett Okamoto tweet about it, and he's right. It would have been just such a wild turn of events to go from Deron Wynn and Philip Haas, then you go to Chris Curtis versus Philip Haas. Haas drops off, and then Krause steps in. So you have a brand new fight, but it doesn't play out like that, and you get Calares versus Gutierrez. Now, Felipe Calares is a guy who's a black belt in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, but he's alternated between wins and losses in his UFC career so far, right? First one was a loss against Geraldo de Freitas. Then he picked up a win over Domingo Pilarte. Lost to Montel Jackson, who's a very talented prospect at bantamweight, in my opinion. Not a bad loss. And then he beats up on Luke Sanders, who's the guy who struggles with his gas tank a little bit, right? Loses the first round of that one, and then I think went on to win the second and third. Now, the problem is that Felipe Calares, while he's talented, I think, on the ground, and he's a pretty good striker as well, he's going up against a guy in Chris Gutierrez who is a phenomenal striker and who's also pretty decent on the ground. Like, you saw him rule for Imanari rules and stuff in his most recent bout against Andre Yule. But you also just got to see shit that you got to see how fluid he was, how well he was setting traps, the pressure that he maintains, his understanding of distance and range and timing and everything. It's pretty expert level. He did struggle a little bit in the first round of his bout versus Cody Durden, especially. Like, Cody Durden got to his back and Durden wasn't able to submit him, but it also didn't really look like Gutierrez knew how to get out of that position when Durden was on his back. He did end up reversing it towards the end of the round, but I think it was more due to a mistake that Durden made in maintaining the back, if I remember. And then he did go on to that first round was a 10-8 for Durden. I mean, Durden dominated it, right? Just had his back basically the entire fucking first round. But then he did rebound and win the next two rounds, so that fight ends in a draw. I think that in this matchup in particular, it's going to be very hard, very hard for Felipe Calares to get this fight to the ground. I think that a lot of the times when you see guys who are very good, they're submission artists and they're good at jiu-jitsu. Like I said, Calares is a black. He hasn't found a finish in his UFC career yet, though. So that's another thing that's making me think Gutierrez is going to walk away with the win. I think Gutierrez picks up the win via knockout. I think that he just does such a good job of applying pressure. And I don't think that there are going to be ample opportunities for Felipe Calares to shoot and get a good takedown on him, right? I think that it's going to be I think Gutierrez is going to walk him down the whole time. I just don't see him hitting an explosive enough shot to get this fight to the ground. I mean, I'm not saying it can't end up there. Like, it's an MMA fight. They're going to end up in grappling situations and clinch situations and stuff like that. But I just think that Gutierrez is going to be the stronger guy in those situations. And also, I just think that, like, man, I don't think he's ever going to let Calares get going, right? And when you look at Calares' fight, like especially his one against Luke Sanders, when Luke Sanders was really teeing off on him in the first round and stuff and letting his hands go, you saw that Calares would get frozen up in these like certain situations, right? When you could tell that he was confused a little bit by the combinations that Sanders was throwing at him. And I think that he's going to see a game with many more layers to it coming from Gutierrez than Luke Sanders, right? And not only are there going to be more layers to the striking and more variety in the attacks that he's going to see and more fluid head movement and just, you know, a little bit of everything, but Gutierrez is going to be able to maintain that pace over three rounds. And if Calares is not able to change up the tempo and get this fight to the ground, he's going to have a major disadvantage. And I just think it's going to be a very difficult task for him to get it there. I like Gutierrez to pick up a win in this fight via second or third round TKO. I think for the first round, it kind of dots him up, pressures him, feels him out a little bit. And then I think that'll start to really wear on Calares. And as the second and third come around, you'll see these opportunities get these windows kind of get larger and larger. And I think Gutierrez will capitalize on him and get Caleras out of there before the 15-minute mark. Next on the card is an interesting fight, I think, between Mariah Agapova and Sabina Mazo. Now, Sabina Mazo is going to have, I think, in this fight, a significant speed disadvantage. However, I think that her technique is a little bit more precise. Not a little bit. I think her technique is quite a bit more precise. I think it's a little bit more refined. And one of the things about Agapova is she comes out like a bat out of fucking hell. Like I said, she's going to have a major speed advantage and everything like that. But I just think that in terms of like pure technique, Sabina Mazo is going to have an advantage. Now, she's also, I think, Sabina Mazo, I think, is going to be able to hold a more consistent pace over the course of the fight. Because like I said, this... Okay, so Sabina Mazo is somebody who I think is going to struggle a lot against a girl like Mariah Agapova, at least at first, because she does come out so hot. And if you look at her technique and everything, it actually is pretty goddamn good. Like, I don't think that she sets up everything the way Sabina Mazo does, but she knows how to throw a fucking punch and a kick at the same time, right? And she puts some heat behind it. I mean, she has finished a lot of the girls that she's fought. So I don't think Sabina Mazo is gonna have seen that level of intensity coming from someone yet. And I think that probably Agapova is most dangerous in the first round, because okay, it's like, I think that Agapova has to get the fight out of there in the first round for a couple of reasons. First off, she obviously starts off fast, right? That's like, I think that's going to be really her only advantage in this, because you could argue that maybe she should slow the pace down a little bit and not burn so much out of the gas tank early on. But she has such a massive speed advantage and everything, and I think a power advantage over Sabina Mazo, I don't think she should change up her style too much for this fight, because I think that if she does try to slow down and pace herself, she's going to be doing it against somebody who fights at a very consistent pace. Like, that's just her style. So she's going to be playing into that. And Sabina Mazo is going to be settled into what that pace feels like, and it's just going to be natural for her. That's how she fights. Meanwhile, Agapova would have to like mentally think about how she's going to exert herself during certain moments and stuff like that. It's not new to her. She fights how she fights, right? And that's why I think it's incredibly difficult to find these balance with these people who like to come out wild and stuff, because you don't want to take that away from them. But at the same time, they do need to conserve it a little bit and be more intelligent about how they exert their energy, because you see them oftentimes wear out and that's how they lose fights and stuff, right? So to me, this is just a matter of now, maybe Agapova has been working on that. Maybe she does come out with a very well-rounded pace and she's able to just keep ahead of Sabina, utilize the speed advantage and put like a little bit of a more... I don't see that happening though. I think that there are going to be... She's going to want to, at some point in the fight, even if she doesn't come out guns blazing and she is trying to settle down, there are going to be moments in that fight where she's not going to be able to resist her instincts and she's going to up the fucking ante and maybe make it dangerous for Mazo. But I think Mazo overall is just going to, like I said, just stay the course, be more consistent. And if she can survive that big wave from Agapova, whenever it comes, I think that she ends up winning this fight by decision. I think it's just going to be a matter of Sabina Mazo losing a round. That's what I think is going to happen. I don't think that Maria Agapova is going to be able to maintain the pace that she needs to pick up the win. Now, I do think that if she gets into one of these flurries and she does bring one of these waves on, that she can absolutely like catch Sabina Mazo with something and knock her out. Like I said, there's going to be a significant speed advantage and a significant, I think, aggressiveness advantage in terms of for Maria Agapova. But I just think that Sabina Mazo is a little bit too technical. I do think that Sabina Mazo gets the win, but guys, I would not be surprised if Maria Agapova just comes out and starts fucking her up, right? Like, when she puts on a flurry, man, she's a dangerous, dangerous fighter. So it's going to be, this is an interesting matchup to me. You know, you get a little bit of a brawler against a little bit of a strategist, I guess. So like I said, taking Sabina Mazo, but don't be surprised if Maria Agapova pulls something off. Thank you for hanging with me through that prediction. I know I was bouncing all over the place for it. All right, next fight up is going to be Tim Elliott versus Mateus Nicolau. We mentioned this bout previously when we were talking about James Krause potentially stepping in to fight, right? He's cornering Tim Elliott. And according to Tim Elliott, a lot of guys are moving to Kansas City just to be trained by James Krause because he's such a fucking excellent coach. A lot of people think he should be winning Coach of the Year. And, man, it's hard to argue. He's the results of his athletes and his fighters in the UFC have been pretty incredible. And Tim Elliott stepping in to fight Mateus Nicolau is an interesting flyweight matchup because Tim Elliott's one of those guys who comes forward with this kind of wild, unorthodox, weird style where he's in and out and stuff, and he's mixing in these takedowns and putting you in these awkward grappling exchanges that you maybe have never been in before that aren't familiar to you. And, you know, he kind of hits these guys. They kind of get confused when they fight him. But the thing about Mateus Nicolau is Mateus Nicolau is a counter striker, and he's a guy who has pretty good wrestling too, so I think he's going to be able to hang around with Tim Elliott in that grappling department. But Nicolau's a guy who just likes to sit back, read, kind of pick up on the patterns that you're doing, and then he starts letting his hands flow. And he's not very good moving forward and being the initiator, but I don't think he has to be in this fight. I think Tim Elliott's going to come to him, and I think that Mateus Nicolau is going to be able to expose some openings, right? And I think that Tim Elliott, it's going to be hard for Nicolau to find the timing at first, but as we start to get like midway through the second round into the third round, I think you'll start to see Nicolau catching the beat, and I think that he beats Tim Elliott via decision. I think he's probably going to lose early on or have trouble with the style, but once he starts reading the patterns and the movements and everything of Tim Elliott, he's a very talented counter striker, and once he feels comfortable, he's not afraid to let his hands go. He'll throw big flying knees and stuff like that, spinning shit. I mean, he's exciting, and his third round against Manel Kopp was fucking incredible. That was a great fight in general. And, you know, you got to see a little bit of everything out of him in that fight. But I think in this fight in particular, Elliott's awkward style is going to get him into trouble because I think that he's going to start throwing stuff and Mateus Nicolau is just going to stay fundamentally sound. He's going to be comfortable backing up and he's going to start capitalizing on openings that he starts finding as the fight progresses against Tim Elliott. So I got Mateus Nicolau winning by decision. I think it takes him a little bit to figure it out, but I think he does. And I think Tim Elliott maybe wins like the wrestling exchanges, but I think Nicolau works his way back to his feet and is competent enough in the jiu-jitsu area to never get submitted. So, yeah, I've got Nicolau in this fight. All right, the next fight is an interesting one at welterweight between Randy Brown and Jared Gooden. Actually, it's the catchweight bout at like 174.5. I think Gooden missed weight by 4.5 pounds. But Randy Brown, man, is a guy who's been boxing. I looked this up. I think he said he started boxing in like 2005 or some shit like that. It's been something like that. It's like 16 years of boxing experience. He's been fighting in the UFC for quite a while now, actually. I don't even know how many fights he has to his record. And he's a finisher, guys, right? He just choked out Alex Oliveira in his most recent win. Took a brutal loss to Vicente Luque before that. But he was looking good at certain moments of that fight. Like, you could really get to see the head movement and the footwork. And he mixes in legs, kicks well. And he just mixes everything up well. And he's got long limbs, so it makes him dangerous on the ground. Randy Brown's a bad motherfucker. But Vicente Luque right now is like top five in the world, in my opinion. Maybe even top four. Like, maybe top three. Vicente Luque is so fucking good. He's a killer. And his striking is, he's powerful. And everything is just so fundamentally sound. And it's straight down the pipe. And that was a very tough matchup for Randy Brown, in my opinion. And he held his own until he got finished, got hit with that big knee at the end, right? But I kind of expected Luque to win that fight. But Randy Brown looked, there were moments in that fight where you go, okay, this kid has some real fucking potential. And then when he sees that level, he knows where he has to be now, right? So, tough loss for Randy Brown, but one where he also rebounded and beat Alex Oliveira, right? He submitted Warley Alves with a triangle choke. Now, this was a fight where you did see him get taken down a little bit, which, I don't know, man, you know, I don't think that'll be a whole lot of a concern against Jared Gooden, to be honest, but even when he did get taken down, He ends up hitting a triangle on Alves, right? And that's the danger with Randy Brown is that he's dangerous from everywhere because he's got these long limbs. He's a submission threat. He can knock you out. He has very technical striking, good footwork, in and out movement. Like I said, just very firm understanding of distance. There are a lot of guys that are big and like long and kind of like lanky a little bit like Randy Brown is that don't have control over their body. And Randy Brown, you can tell, is one of those guys who does and who understands where his range and his distance is and where he can crack from and where he's safe and where he's not that he doesn't get in trouble. Like, he got exposed against Luque a little bit, but like I said, Luque is next level. I think in this fight against Jared Gooden, Jared Gooden's a guy who, you know, hasn't been handed easy fights so far in his UFC career. He came in and had to fight Alan Joban in the first fight, who's got nasty fucking kicks. He was hitting with that left kick to the body, eating those. And then he had to fight Abubakar Nurmagomedov. That was a fight, really, where I think a lot of people thought Nurmagomedov would take it down. But he was content to just sit there and box with Gooden. But I think one of the things that really hurt Gooden in that fight, and I think it hurts a lot of guys when you're fighting a wrestler, is they'll carry their hands super low. And when you guys are carrying your hands, like if you carry your hands down here, you have to strike from these awkward angles, and it leads to you throwing more singular strikes as opposed to if your hands are up here, and the combinations can just flow more smoothly, right? So when guys are holding their hands down and they're fighting a wrestler, I understand that you're trying to prevent the takedown, but I also feel like it gives them a little bit of an advantage, because now that your hands are down here, well, if a wrestler learns how to box a little bit, he's going to start dotting you up, and then your hands come up eventually anyway, and then you get hit with the takedown when your timing and everything gets busted. So I personally think that it's better to carry your hands at like a mid-level so you can still throw combinations and stuff, right? Like, you don't have to have like a fucking crazy high, like you want to be able to get down to defend the takedown, true, but if you're taking away your ability to throw combinations, you're taking away the advantage that you have over the wrestler, right? And you got to be comfortable enough to throw knees and stuff up the middle to stuff takedowns as well and make them pay that way, hit them with uppercuts as you're backing up. Like, you have to have other ways. You have to have other ways to deal with the takedown so that you can still let your offense flow effectively, right? If you don't do that, it's going to be very difficult to win against wrestlers. Like, carrying your hands down here and hoping to hit them with these singular shots is not going to work, because they're carrying their hands high because they're not afraid to shoot on you. So their boxing gets opened up while your hands are low, and then they start shooting as your hands come up to defend. It's like fucking, you know, people struggle with that all the time, and I really think that, like, carrying your hands low can be a bit of a disadvantage sometimes. Anyway, fucking rant over regarding that. But then he rebounds. He comes in his third UFC. His first two UFC fights are no joke, right? Like, those are tough fights. And then he comes in and picks up a win over Nicklaus Stoltz at UFC on ESPN, the Hall versus Strickland card on July 31st, 2021. So it's not like the guy doesn't have knockout power. I just don't think he's going to have the tools in the toolbox to beat Randy Brown. He might be able to catch him with something and knock him out, but I think that Randy Brown is going to have the advantage in nearly every department, right? Maybe not the power department, but from a technical perspective. I think he's going to jab better. I think he's going to have better timing. His range is obviously going to be much greater than Gooden's, and the variety that he's going to throw. He's going to be throwing front kicks to the body. He's going to be chopping up the legs. And one thing that you can do to Randy Brown, because he's so long and that you've seen him struggle with a little bit, like especially in the Cowboy Oliveira fight, are leg kicks. Like, you can chop his legs down, and that'll start to limit his movement a little bit, right? And it'll start to limit how much he's able to set things up with his footwork, because he's, you know, and he's long, so the legs are there to be kicked. So, but I just don't know that Gooden has it in his arsenal to throw leg kicks like that that are really going to impact the fight while staying defensively sound. Like, I think that if he does fire off those leg kicks, Brown's going to be in touching him and making him pay for it, right? I just think that Brown outclasses Gooden in every department and probably picks up a knockout win in this one. I think it'll take a little bit of time. I think the strikes will start to accumulate. But then you see, like, when fucking Randy Brown cracked Oliveira with that right cross. Man, he's got power. And he's so long that if he catches you on the end of his punch, the momentum by the time the punch gets there is, man, he's got a lot of power behind it, right? So he can crack too. But I just think that Randy Brown ends up, like, it'll be an accumulation and an overwhelming barrage of attacks on the feet that leads to a knockout win for Randy Brown in probably like the second round, I would say. All right. Finally, we move on to the main event between Mackenzie Dern and Marina Rodriguez. Now, this is an interesting fight because obviously everybody knows that Mackenzie Dern is a very accomplished jiu-jitsu player, right? And you don't want to necessarily end up on the ground with her. Now, Amanda Hibosh showed that was able to nullify a little bit of her jiu-jitsu and stuff and really dot Mackenzie Dern up in the striking exchanges, right? But as a general rule of thumb, she's not somebody that you want to be fucking around on the ground with. And Mackenzie Dern is fighting Marina Rodriguez, who is a very gifted striker and has a very strong Muay Thai clinch. Speaking of Amanda Hibosh, Mackenzie Dern loses to Amanda Ribas, right? Via decision. But Marina Rodriguez knocks out Amanda Ribas in the second round with a big elbow, right? This fight is... I feel like this fight is very difficult to pick, because if you look at Mackenzie Dern too, after that loss to Amanda Ribas, she kind of rebounds and starts coming back. And especially if you look at the fight against Jandaroba, Verna Jandaroba, I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. You really got to see the hands improve of Mackenzie Dern. And in those close quarters situations where she's going to end up, I think, quite a bit with Marina Rodriguez, and where Mackenzie Dern is probably going to have to end up if she wants to start getting the fight to the ground. Like, she's going to have to get into these clinch situations up against the cage. You got to see some nasty, dirty boxing from Mackenzie Dern, shortening up her shots and really teeing off on Jandaroba in those situations, you know? So that tie clinch might not be as readily available for Marina Rodriguez as she thinks, right? And if it's not there like that, and she's not able to do the damage and control in the clinch like she's used to, like, I think Marina Rodriguez is long, but I think she's a lot stronger than a lot of the girls that she fights in this division. I don't think she's going to be stronger than Mackenzie Dern. And if Mackenzie Dern can start working that dirty boxing and use her aggression and her strength to start pushing things up against the cage, fuck, this could be a quick night for Mackenzie Dern and a quick submission victory for her. However, if Marina Rodriguez is able to survive, I think if Marina Rodriguez is able to establish the range and everything, regardless of the fact that Mackenzie Dern's striking looks much improved, I still don't think it's on the level that Marina Rodriguez is. I don't think that Mackenzie Dern wants to turn this into a fucking kickboxing match, right? But Mackenzie Dern just has to be effective enough that she can pressure Marina Rodriguez back against the cage with her hands so that she can set up the takedowns and stuff, right? I don't know, man. I think that if Marina Rodriguez can do a, if she can survive a dangerous position from Mackenzie Dern, Marina Rodriguez has experience going 5 rounds in her bout against Michelle Waterson, which she won via unanimous decision, right? So she has this experience. If she can avoid being taken down, and if she is taken down, because I think it'll end up there inevitably at some point in a 5-round fight, if she can survive that first real submission threat, I think she'll be okay. But Mackenzie Dern's jiu-jitsu is so fucking rock solid, and just so, it's going to be levels above anything that Marina Rodriguez has ever seen. Like, Amanda Ribas, you know, putting you in danger, taking you to the ground and stuff like that is not the same fucking thing as Mackenzie Dern getting you on the ground. It's different, right? She has a world-class jiu-jitsu. World-class, like, top of the food chain for female jiu-jitsu. In terms of pure technique, in the regardless of gender, right? Like, I mean, she's fucking incredible. But I think Mackenzie Dern gets the job done, but if Marina Rodriguez does a good job at stuffing the takedowns and controlling the clinch and doesn't let Mackenzie Dern get going with the dirty boxing and stuff, which will end up leading to the takedowns, I think that Marina Rodriguez, if she doesn't get submitted, I think she wins this fight. I don't think that, well, you might see Mackenzie Dern out-wrestle her too, but I think that if it goes the distance, it's probably because Mackenzie Dern had trouble finding her way in and landing strikes that led to the takedowns, right? Like pressing it up against the cage. I think you might see her struggle with the distance management a little bit, kind of like she did in the Ribas fight, you know? But I don't know. Final prediction, I kind of think that Mackenzie Dern is just going to have, she's going to have good enough boxing, good enough fundamentals on the feet that she can get it to the ground where she specializes. And then once it's there, she's going to be so many levels above Rodriguez that she's going to be able to get her out of there with some type of finish. So, final prediction, I'm going Mackenzie Dern. I'm going second round submission win. But we'll see. It's a good matchup, and there's a lot of different variables taking place in this main event. So it's a fight that I'm really looking forward to between two really promising prospects. So it's an exciting one. And, you know, the grappler versus striker thing, how does it play out? Like, who's improved the most where? And I think the biggest factor for me in taking Mackenzie Dern is that I think Mackenzie Dern has probably improved more in the striking department during her UFC tenure than Marina Rodriguez has improved in the grappling department, if that makes sense. So I got Mackenzie Dern. All right, let's go through. Let's recap the main card picks real quick, and we'll close this thing out. So I got Chris Gutierrez beating Felipe Calares. I just think the striking from Gutierrez is going to be overwhelming, and it'll be too hard for Calares to get it to the ground. Maria Agapova versus Sabina Mazo. I got Mazo winning this fight, but don't be surprised if Maria Agapova comes out and puts on a fucking, like, some sort of crazy barrage where she just lets it go and lets her hands fly and takes advantage of the fact that she does have a speed and power advantage early on and puts Sabina Mazo away. I think that speed and tenacity and aggressiveness from Agapova might surprise Sabina Mazo a little bit, which could lead to a win for Agapova. But realistically, I think that she probably survives the barrage for as long as she needs to, and then the technique and the consistent pace of Sabina Mazo start to take over, and she wins the fight via decision. That's kind of how I think it plays out. I don't know. Tim Elliott versus Mateus Nicolau. I think the counter work of Mateus Nicolau is just going to be a little bit too much. I think he gets a bead on the awkward movement of Tim Elliott and starts really working leg kicks and stuff, which is something I forgot to mention during the breakdown. Mateus Nicolau works leg kicks really effectively. That'll limit the movement of Tim Elliott, which will also aid in creating those openings that he's going to be looking for while trying to counter, right? So it's all going to kind of, I think, the leg kicks will start opening that up as well and creating those opportunities for him. Randy Brown versus Jared Gooden, good fight, but I just think that Randy Brown has too many tools in the toolbox. Don't think Jared Gooden's going to have enough variety in his game to deal with all of the threats that Randy Brown poses. I think Randy Brown probably gets Jared Gooden out of there via KO second. I feel like second round for some reason. I don't know. And then Mackenzie Dern versus Marina Rodriguez in the main event. I think this is going to boil down to whether Marina Rodriguez can keep it standing, whether she can be strong in the tie clinch and negate the dirty boxing of Mackenzie Dern. And for Mackenzie Dern, I think this whole thing boils down to getting it on the ground. I know that your striking and your hands have improved a little bit, but I still don't think you want to end up in a kickboxing match. I think Mackenzie Dern is going to get Marina Rodriguez out of there. I think once she gets her to the ground, she'll look for the submission, and her jiu-jitsu will just be too many levels above Rodriguez for her to be able to defend anything. So I think with that being said, that's going to wrap this one up, guys. I appreciate everyone for tuning in. And like I said, I apologize for getting this out so late. I think the prelims have already kicked off, like, by the time I'm wrapping this up now. And the main card starts here in like 2 hours. So I'll get this published. Thank you guys again. If you enjoyed the content, please subscribe, give it a thumbs up, leave a comment down below. And I will catch you guys later. So thank you again, and bye-bye.